You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Well, thank you guys and gals for joining us for episode 45 of the Reinvest Podcast, where Seth and I get to show you how to maximize your life through the power of real estate investing. Taxes. At the time of this recording, everybody's kind of going through their tax season right now, so everybody's a little on edge.
People are scrambling to get their stuff done.
I was a mess. We use the same tax guy. Shout out to Austin Shearer out there. And you sat down with him first, and you guys were taking bets about how long it was going to take for me to get my stuff in.
Yeah. He was like, I'm sure Garrett hasn't even started yet. So I was like, yeah, probably not.
Joke's on you guys. I got my stuff in 5 days later just to stick it to you. So, So on the topic of taxes, though, we've got an awesome guest here today with us, Brett Swartz. Brett, how you doing, man?
Garrett and Seth, I'm better than I deserve. Grateful to be here.
So tax, I mean, you've got such an interesting kind of like emphasis in the real estate investing industry. You oftentimes probably get some shade for being a tax guy until they realize how much money you can save them. And then you've also got a tall order because you have to make taxes engaging for people and not put them to sleep.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it, you know. And I didn't start out as a tax guy. That's why I like to say for the entrepreneur real estate person, perhaps I'm a great person to be able to relate with you because I didn't study to be a CPA nor a tax attorney. I have had the privilege to study under, I think, one of the, like an Elon Musk of tax and CPAs. He's a genius for about 10,000 hours. And so With that, we have some neat ways to help people that otherwise they wouldn't know, or maybe even their CPAs or tax people wouldn't know.
Can you imagine being like likened to the Elon Musk in the tax world? Like if you compare me to Elon Musk in any industry, I don't know if that's a compliment or like...
No, it's a compliment because he's a genius.
Yeah, he's...
But I guess we're not here to...
But eccentric, yeah.
We're not here to talk about Elon Musk. Anyway, it's great to have you on today. So why don't you just go ahead and start out? What is your company? What do you do? What area of taxes do you kind of focus on for people? And just give us kind of a high-level overview.
Absolutely. So our company is called Capital Gains Tax Solutions. Our main purpose is to help people envision what their wealth plan looks like post-sale of a highly appreciated asset, help them build a team and build some strategy or strategies around capital gains tax and estate tax planning, and then have freedom, unlock the freedoms they may desire, location, time, energy, 1031 freedom, estate tax freedom, and then to be able to not only preserve the wealth on the exit, but then be able to create it at optimal timing. So that's a lot there, but it's essentially... We're here to help you with your tax flow and your cash flow, we love what we do because coming from Taxifornia, we've got a lot of people who've had a lot of tax over the years, so we've learned the hard way for sure.
That could make its way onto a T-shirt, Taxifornia. Yeah. With that, such a niched kind of approach to tax consultation and really crafting a plan for people. To execute some of these milestones in a way that you really kind of have one shot at. You know, it's a very crucial intersections of people's business and success. How did you get into that?
Great question. Well, we stumbled upon a need and really clarified what our clients wanted the ideal outcome to be. And this started in 2006. I was at Marcus & Millichap helping people buy and sell multifamily investment properties as a broker. Mm. And we would help people do 1031 exchanges, and things were going well for a while. Then all of a sudden, everything came to a crashing halt, essentially end of 07, 08. And then I saw clients, friends, and family lose half or everything in the next 3 years. And A lot of it in multifamily investment real estate or commercial assets. And so we discovered that the need was an alternative to a 1031 exchange that didn't force people to be over-leveraged, under-diversified, and not a lot of liquidity, buying deals that didn't make a lot of sense for them, letting the tax tail wag the investment dog, and or selling a business, a primary home, crypto, or other assets now today, right, with crypto where it was at least from a year ago, And not having a 1031 option, right? And so we discovered that need. We clarified that the ideal outcome for our clients was to buy when it made sense for them, to pay off debt when they wanted to unlock location, time, and energy freedom, to diversify out of a business into investment real estate, diversify out of stock into investment real estate, a primary home. And as we understood that the pain didn't have to be what it was, that they could sell high, buy low, we essentially said, we've got to fill this role because most people don't understand how to do this, right? And we thought we were the Navy SEALs of investment real estate. We thought 1031 exchanges was the end all be all,
right?
Swap until you drop, get the stepped up basis, all of those things we've been taught. And by the way, we still love the 1031. We still help people do that. It's just not the primary mode of a vehicle right now when you want flexibility, diversification, and some liquidity. And so fast forward after, you know, this is like 2009, in the middle of it, I learned about this thing called a deferred sales trust. And we said, you know, this sounds too good to be true. And I'm at Marcus & Millichap at the time. A lot of our agents were sitting in that office going, wow, well, if that's real, that's pretty cool. But guess what? The market's crashed right now. Not a lot of people have a lot of gains, just the opposite. Right. And so I don't know if you've ever heard like the prophet's son accepted in his hometown. That became my story for years. I would cold call people and be like, guys, I think I've got the solution for you. And they're like, aren't you just a broker? Aren't you just a multifamily guy? Are you a CPA? Like, call me maybe in a couple of years when things are back up. But slowly, as I began to learn more and more about the deferred sales, what it could do, that opened up possibilities to explore with CPAs, with tax attorneys, with ultra high net worth individuals, billionaires, millionaires, mostly multifamily people. And then I started to, and then it became more and more popular. I started to close more and more deals. Fast forward, we launched the company and we just went all in and said, you know what? We could take this and we could scale it across the country. It could really help a lot of people. And here we are today. And we're talking.
So I have to smile and I chuckle because anytime somebody comes out and says that they've kind of cracked the code for a new tax strategy, everybody has like a negative example of what that means. And typically the person that did the new things in jail. So like that, what a hurdle to have to overcome, especially at a time in the market where people were not thinking like deferment of taxes. They were just trying to like lick their wounds, cut their losses. So how did you kind of champion a message that people were skeptical to and simultaneously not interested in?
Great question. It really starts with the phrase, if I could help you achieve what you're really trying to achieve, your ideal outcome, Garrett, with a proven tax deferral strategy where you can sleep at night knowing that you're not going to jail, not having to overpay for the 1031 exchange, being out of a property, being out of debt, being diversified, you know, selling multiple assets and now being maybe a little more passive. If I could, would that be of value to you? Right? And that was the basic statement that I would say to people. And they'd say, that sounds way too good to be true, Brett. What are you talking about? And I would say, but if I could, would that be of value to you? Yeah, that'd be tremendous value to me. Okay, great. Well, let me introduce you to somebody who's figured this thing out. And by the way, this tax attorney, he figured it out 27 years ago now. Thousands and thousands and thousands of closes, billions and billions of assets sold, over 24 no change, no finding IRS audit. So although it was new to me in 2009, it wasn't new in the sense of like, oh, I created it and let's go try it out with this tax attorney who may or may not know what he's doing. No, he'd already proven it, right? He already blazed the trail. Yeah. But we were so locked in at Marcus & Millichap, and most people are still locked in. They're locked into just the 1031. Mm-hmm. They're locked into just the traditional ways of doing things, right? Because there's 5,000 QI companies banging the drum of a 1031 exchange, and that's all they know. And you can't blame their CPAs and tax people and real estate professionals because that's all they know. And guess what? On this side, they keep it proprietary. They keep it protected. We always do. Two reasons. One, we don't want competition. But two, we don't want people to mess it up and then for the IRS to shut it all down, right? So, So it wasn't like my novel idea. I was just curious enough to learn about it and say, if this is real, this can change. This could change the industry forever. And so I'm not sure if that quite answers the question, Garrett. But that's sort of where, how we do it. Go ahead, Seth.
When you came on board with this guy, and now it's capital gains tax solutions, and you started going hard after that, did you hang up your broker's license?
No, I have not, because there's synergy there, right? So I still will broker deals, and we have a team that we're growing across the country. And in fact, part of our mission is to not only lead and inspire the building of wealth through transformational capital gains tax and estate tax solutions, but it's also through the coaching and training of the best professionals across the country, the top 10,000 multifamily brokers, commercial real estate syndicators, luxury real estate agents, business and M&A attorneys, anyone who's helping anyone exit highly appreciated assets, because there's $84 trillion that's going to pass, guys, from our parents to us in the next 20 years. So this is known as the largest wealth transfer in the history of the planet. So if you think about that for a second, there's 10,000 baby boomers turning 65 every day, and there's 77 million baby boomers in the U.S. alone, and there's an estimated $84 trillion that's going to transfer. This is the largest wealth transfer in the history of the planet. We would be poor stewards of our gifts and talents that we've been given with even cash flow and what we know about investment real estate.
Yeah.
If we didn't engage with the largest expense, which is this tax, because if we don't, guess what happens? The government, or people either won't sell, or if they do sell and they don't have a great tax deferral strategy, it's going to go to a government that probably everyone who's listening, no matter what side you vote for, would say they're probably going to waste it away pretty quick, right? So we believe if we can keep the wealth in the hands of those who created it and to giving the causes they believe in most, they can make an impact for communities. And so it became a calling at a certain point. It wasn't just solve a client, help them defer some tax, save some money. It was like, okay, now it's a movement. If people understand this will change everything. And so, yeah, it's constantly kind of, Garrett, to your other question, helping people overcome false beliefs if it's too good to be true. I would have already heard about it, right? Or is it so new that it's not legal? Has it not been tested by the IRS? And once people get through that it's legal, that it works, there's a proven track record, then it's just about, wow, how many cool things can this thing really do? Go ahead, Seth, you have a thought on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, not even just with DST, but even with the 1031 exchange, I mean, even in our market, there's a lot of people that have never heard of it. You know what I mean? We kind of bring people in, bring speakers in. We've had a couple 1031 guys on the podcast, and people are hearing it for the first time, even though it's been around forever, and it's even more mainstream than the deferred sales trust. So I think it just takes so long for things to become mainstream and saturate and really to teach people. I think it just takes a long time.
I was listening to a podcast of one of the largest real estate developers who was the guest on this podcast show. And the host was asking him what changes he had seen take place in, you know, his multi-decade experience in real estate investing. And he said that it's been the barrier to entry for commercial real estate investing has been brought down. And I think that's part of what we're seeing is slowly these concepts, these ideas, these tax strategies that were reserved and kind of like behind stage in like the upper room lounge of the club, like being talked about, they're now being democratized and opened up to people who are more mid-level and smaller investors. That's what I see you guys doing. I mean, obviously you still have to, there's got to be a deal size that makes sense to do that. But I'm sure the people that are picking up the phone and calling you are probably not that far away from people that we know.
Spot on, Garrett. Yeah, I couldn't say it better. And our minimum, just so people are wondering, our $1 million net proceeds, $1 million gain on selling any asset of any kind. It could be stock, crypto, primary home, investment, real estate. We can save a failed 1031, a business venture, a partnership, C Corp, S Corp, LLC. Really, no matter what you're selling, as long as each transaction has at least $1 million net proceeds, $1 million gain, you qualify. But yeah, you're exactly right. It is democratizing because we have podcasts, we have books, we have YouTube, and we have the rapid pace of information, even AI and what's coming out, how quickly we can access. But yeah, so it's not just knowing the information; it's also having the confidence and the conviction that the people who are doing the strategies, helping you to execute these. In our role, that's part of what we do. We're a trustee, and we help to kind of like the offensive coordinator, right? And we're bringing the tax attorney, the CPA, the financial advisor, the business broker or real estate broker, commercial estate syndicator. We're bringing everyone together, and we're helping to execute on this for the client. But I think that's a big part of it. And then I think it's just deal stories. Like, to me, my biggest thing, I remember I was at Marcus and Millichap and we were hearing about this. I was like, well, how many of these have been done? Like, when are these happening? Like, give me something tangible. I'm trying to look for my book with all of our deals. I guess I can just pull this thing out. But once I start like showing people literally the deals that we close and we go through those stories and then we put people in touch with the people that are, you know, our clients, like Shay Pope, who you guys met at the Best Ever Conference when I spoke there 2 years ago. He did a $2.6 million deal, but we just did a $17 million deal in Sacramento for a billboard company exit sale, right? For a client.
Oh, wow.
We did a $10 million deal in Idaho for five mobile home parks. Okay. We did a $37 million, two exits for a client out of Texas, a $4.2 million deal for Ron Anderson out of Colorado for an Airbnb property. And then they literally shared their stories on our YouTube channel. Bitcoin, we did a $12.5 million exit with two different clients for Bitcoin and Ethereum before the crash. a $13 million exit for a car wash in San Diego. Once you start sharing these, people go, oh, well, if they're doing it and now I can relate. Oh, if they got over the things that were all the same questions everyone has. Do I give up too much control? Is it too expensive? And is it legal? Does it work?
Yeah.
Right. Then all of a sudden they go, oh, this is possible for them. You know, what's better than me paying, you know, 30 yeah. to 50% of my gain in tax.
So up to this point, we've talked about the why, kind of how you got to this point. I'm sure a lot of people are still like, okay, you've built it up. Tell us, what is a DST? And so, we're full-time commercial agents and investors. We're very familiar with 1031 exchanges. But I agree with you. There's limitations to that. It is a tool on the tool belt, but not the end-all be-all. So for someone to know that there might be another option that would give them even more flexibility for their situation, I think is huge. So give us the breakdown, that maybe the differences between 1031 exchange, Delaware statutory trust, and then deferred sales trust, which is what we're talking about today.
Yeah, sounds good. If you guys give me screen share too, I could, for those of you watching on YouTube, I'll share my screen so we can kind of walk through some of this stuff. But let's just start with the traditional 1031 exchange. I think you guys have to give me that access to do that. Traditional 1031 exchange is just the ability to take your proceeds from an investment real estate property and move it into another investment real estate property while deferring the tax. Okay. So let's say you bought a property for $1 million. It's worth $3 million. Okay. You would have paid about 30, 35% of the gain in tax. Instead of paying all that tax, you can roll all of the proceeds into what's called a 1031 exchange qualified intermediary. And then from there, you can buy another property with right. that amount of money. And therefore, you basically defer 100% of your capital gains tax and depreciation recapture. So it's just a great way to build wealth within investment real estate. It's kind of like right. an IRA. It's kind of like a 401k. Basically, instead of taking the capital now and being taxed on it, you can roll it into these tax vehicles and defer and grow the wealth. Okay. Enter the Delaware 1031, aka the
I think I changed it so you can screen share here.
Okay. Great. And I'll move to the DST here in a minute.
Cool.
Move to the Delaware 1031. The Delaware is also known as a Delaware Statutory Trust, also known as a DST. Most people that get us confused, they go, oh, DST, they think they know, but that's just a part of the 1031 family. Essentially, for a Delaware, someone like Garrett, Seth, and like four other guys can form like, it's kind of like a big syndication with typically larger properties. It could be 1, 2, 3 properties. But they buy and they close on the assets, and then they share the they sell the shares via a 1031 exchange. So it's 1031 eligible to buy shares into a trust that mm-hmm. gives you ownership of right. a property. So it's cool because it's passive, typically non-recourse debt, larger institutional type of deals. Usually, some of the downsides is you give all control, all diversification, all liquidity, and there's huge fees. It could be 10-15% as high. And so, by the way, I've done Delawares, and Delawares have their purpose and their place. And it doesn't mean those fees aren't worth the investment. They could be great deals. Just got to be aware of what they are, right? But it only works for investment real estate. So up until this point, we've only talked about those assets and go traditional yeah. 1031 or a Delaware 1031. Now, a deferred sales trust is a way to defer tax using an installment sale method known as IRC 453 or seller carryback. Where instead of taking, let's say, those $3 million at the close of escrow or sending those $3 million to an exchange accommodator, the $3 million can be, or the asset or the entity or even the equity can be defeased into this trust. It's a single entity trust that only does business. Let's say it was Garrett's deal and does business with Garrett. And Garrett, in exchange, instead of getting the $3 million, he gets a promissory note for $3 million. So he's lent the $3 million to the trust, and therefore he's deferring about 35% of what he would have paid in tax on that $2 million gain. And this is where the cool thing happens. It can be invested into stocks, bonds, mutual funds. It can sit in the bank. It can go into T-bills. It can go into hard money lending. It can do ground-up development. In other words, you can diversify. No timing restrictions. Plus, it gets a new depreciation schedule should he partner with the trust. Plus, it works for any... He might have some crypto that he wanted to sell. He might have, he does his first deal for $1 million. He might have $500,000 of crypto he could add to it. So now he's got $1 million. Or in this scenario, he did $3 million on his first deal. Adds another 500 crypto. He might have another fix and flip that he made, 400,000 on or something. Now he can roll that into the trust because he's already hit that $1 million threshold. He might have a primary home that above and beyond his 121 exclusion. He has additional gain on that he might want to roll into it. So it's a place to consolidate all of your equity and get multiple promissory notes, one trust, But the cool thing is you're dollar cost averaging into investments. You're buying when it makes sense. You're waiting when it doesn't. You also don't have to replace any debt. One of the downsides of the 1031 is equal or greater debt, right? And which means you could probably be taking on more risk, especially if interest rates went from, let's say, 3.5 right. guys to 5.5 or 6.
Right.
It's more risk. Okay. So any questions so far on that before I share my screen and show you the how of the DST?
So I think the big mindset shift is like-kind investment, right? That's what people are very familiar with within the 1031 exchange model and that family of tax deferment. It's got to be like-kind. I mean, within commercial real estate, that's kind of a wide swath, but we're talking about the ability to invest into things that are not real estate related. Is that right?
Absolutely. And vice versa. You can come out of crypto and you can invest into things that are not real estate related or real estate related. We did a $5 million Bitcoin sale at $54,000 a coin, and on one button one day without escrow or anything else, she moved it to the trust moved to the bank, and then four of the $5 million went to a new business LLC startup for her startup company. She worked for Google before this. So it became the seed capital. We call it the Go Fund Yourself, all tax deferred. Mm. By the way, same thing with Shea Pope. Shea sold a $2.6 million business, deferred his tax, and used a portion of the funds to build 70 multifamily units in Tennessee. So it's a great way to build wealth, tax deferred, or be the startup capital for the next investment opportunity.
So just to be clear too, and help, you're educating us on the process here. So, when you say seller carryback, it's not that the seller is holding the note for the buyer. That transaction happened and that was fully capitalized to the seller, but the seller is putting the dispersed funds into a trust. And the buyer has his own financing in place and they're kind of off and the seller's out of the way, but the seller now is borrowing, like for the essentially has a note to the trust where all the proceeds went to.
You nailed it, Garrett. Exactly. We're not financing the traditional buyer. That's the regular buyer. They're all cash or they're getting financed. We don't care. We're not financing them. And the reason you wouldn't do that is the money's not liquid, not diversified. You might have to foreclose on the property and you can't really go make the money work because it's tied up in that deal. But the trust gives you that liquidity, that diversification, and that buyer is gone, right? So it's really two transactions. The first one is selling it to the trust, and the next one is the trust selling it to the ultimate buyer, the money going into the trust, and the trust giving a promissory note to the original seller. And typically these notes are structured as 10-year notes, interest-only payments, with the balloon payment due in 10, somewhere between 6 and 8%, depending on the risk tolerance of the client. So that is the essence of it, but you can joint venture partner with the trust, and we call this lendership. At first, you're just the lender, but then you can become an owner by partnering with the trust, and that's the beauty of this. You're not just stuck as a passive lender. You can become an active entrepreneur with the money, and that's the part where my brain exploded because I'm going, wait, you tell me you can sell high, you can buy low, you can diversify, you can do whatever you want, as long as we do it in this order? The answer is yes. I'm like, why doesn't everyone know about this? Why isn't everybody right. doing this? Like, well, because they right. haven't met us and we don't want to give it out without people abusing it. So we've got to stay within the guardrails of everything. What are the guardrails? You got to have a third party unrelated trustee. That's our role.
Which is effectively like a QI, but...
Good way to think about it. Yep. And so that's the biggest thing. People go, oh, who's the third party, trustee? I'm like, well, that's me. You know, we didn't know each other. That's part of why it actually works, but get to know me, all those things. But guess what? Have you ever done a 1031 before? They're like, yeah. I'm like, same thing. You didn't own the 1031 company. It was third party, unrelated to you. They're like, oh yeah, you're right, huh? Yeah, exactly. So that's part of the education process, which people go, oh, and we work with qualified intermediaries as well. Oh, okay. We work with third party banks, third party financial advisors. All of it's there. Funds are typically held like Charles Schwab or TD Ameritrade, some of the largest in the world. So you have protections there or some local banks. But once you partner with the trust, you can be the managing member, like Garrett or Seth, of that LLC, where the trust is the silent joint venture partner, and you're opening up the bank accounts and you're running the deals. And that's fantastic, right? Because that's, as an entrepreneur, that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. We're just going to help you do it at optimal timing. We're going to help you do it in a very tax efficient way. Oh, by the way, we're going to give you a new depreciation schedule if you're buying multifamily, which is a powerful way to build wealth as well.
Wow. So what are the stipulations in terms of taking income out of that? To live off of, I mean, it's not an IRA or anything really like that, but are there stipulations then if you kind of trust as a silent partner, you're the active partner, how do you make disbursements if you were to JV on a replacement property or investment?
Yeah. So first thing is the trust does need to pay you, right? You can't just say no money forever, right? In fact, we typically like to see payments starting sometime in the first 2 years, but it doesn't have to be the full interest payment. Just to keep it simple, let's say there was $1 million in there. And at 8%, it's $80,000. Garrett, for the first 2 years, you might say, Brett, I don't need or want any of the 80 to start. Can I defer that 80,000 each year for the next 2 years? And in year three, start some distribution of $40,000 of payment, right? Or 60 or 80 or 100, whatever, right? It's your money. We just have to schedule it and have it there on the promissory note. But we don't want to make it where you're just, you know, deferring it for 10 years, no income, right? So the first 2 years is generally when we like to see some payment coming out. That's number one. As far as the joint venture, it just has to have business purpose and it has to be structured in a way where, you know, two unrelated parties, if we were to do a deal, it would be what's called commercially reasonable, right? Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be something so out of whack. That's also why we don't do, you know, 18% interest. Like why are we doing, right, you know, 6 to 8? Well, that's not necessarily commercially reasonable. So right, there's some guidelines we've got to follow and some guardrails, if you will. And that's part of what we do with the tax attorney to make sure we structure it correctly. But here's what I can tell you. The majority of the upside in the LLC is to you, right? That's a nice thing. And you just basically pay the trust as a silent joint venture LP, if you will. It's mm-hmm. a good way to think about it. You file the tax return for the LLC, give it a K-1 to the trust, and the trust takes that K-1 and files it on the trust tax return. In other words, it's part of the envision, build, freedom, you know, three things that we try to help people with. You got to envision what you want your outcome to be, right? You got to build the team, because this takes a team to execute. Hire the who, don't be the how, right? And then you got to build the strategies, or let the team build the strategies for you. And then hopefully the outcome is very clear for the freedoms that you can do, which is creating and preserving more wealth.
So if these are on 10-year notes to the trust, do people close out the trust at the end of 10 years? Is there a taxable event on the back end of this? Or is there a way to rinse and repeat? Or what is the exit of this look like?
Yeah. Exit number one would be you just get the full balloon payment at the end of year 10 and you pay it. By the way, it could be a 5-year term, a 7-year term, a 3-year term. It doesn't have to be 10, right? You could do shorter as well. But at the end of that term, you can also renew or refinance, is a good way to think about it. So let's say it's 9-year, 6 months, 10-year terms coming up. You can refinance and let's say move it for another 10 years and then continue the whole process. And then you can pass it to kids. Kids can step into your shoes and continue the tax deferral. And so it's a nice way to continue to build that wealth. If you do a DST 2.0, the kids can be the beneficiaries and we eliminate the estate tax, which is nice because that's a savings of 40% of anything above your exclusion amounts, which are set to cut in half in 2026. And so that, to me, that's a phenomenal, no charity required, no life insurance required, no gifting to 50 kids required, just simply sell and use the DST 2.0 is what we call it, to a legitimate third-party buyer for fair market value before you die. That's important, right? And it gets it outside the taxable estate, and then anything above and beyond that is eliminated for the 40% estate tax, which is really nice.
So let's get really practical. And I mean, all this is very practical. If you're hearing this for the first time, maybe it's kind of stretching your brain a little bit. So how, kind of bottom line, what are some case studies, some testimonials? I know you mentioned, hey, we helped this person exit out of this into the DST. Here we go. Sweet. This is why you need to be watching on YouTube, people, because we're getting in.
Yeah. So this is not too far from us. He probably splits the difference. You guys are in Ohio today and I'm in St. Augustine, Florida today. This is actually closer to me, Athens, Georgia. So this is Dave Levinson and he shares his story on YouTube. But essentially, Dave was selling a $7.6 million property he did multiple 1031s into. He had about $4.6 million of debt. And Dave is baby boomer. And he's like, you know what? I'm tired of the toilet trash liability. I've made enough wealth. I'm ready to retire, ready to travel, spend time with the grandkids. And he's done hundreds of transactions. And for the first time in his 30 plus years in real estate investing, he decided to use the deferred sales trust. And his words are, the deferred sales trust was made for times like this. And what does that mean? Being out of debt, having liquidity, having diversification, being able to invest passively with the trust into multifamily syndications across the country, right? Not having to put all your eggs into one deal. So that's Dave Levinson's story. You can listen to his story. This is Skeptical Steve. And he doesn't mind me saying that because he's a friend of mine.
It's like Doubting Thomas.
And that's just who he is. And actually, it's a compliment because he takes action, but he's He's not going to take any fluff. He's going to be very, very detailed about what's actually happening. And so Steve grew up in a real estate family. 1031 was talked at the dinner table in Napa, California. His parents and family built up about $30 million of multifamily investments. And Steve was able to save his failed 1031 exchange. A partner backed out last minute. I actually represented him and helped him sell the property. We were in the middle of the 1031. Partner backs out. We save Steve's failed 1031. And so Steve shares this entire story. This is Ron Anderson in Denver, Colorado. Oh, that was Sacramento, California, by the way, for Steve. And then this is Ron Anderson, a $4.2 million deal in Colorado. He and his wife were like, we're making all this money. It's Airbnb is crushing it, but it's taking up all of our time. Like it's tremendous cash flow, but they sold their asset for about $4 million. They had a debt over basis issue. And this is kind of interesting for the listeners. Sometimes we do two strategies. We did a partial Delaware 1031 zero coupon deal to replace his debt over basis. And the other one we did was the rest of the deferred sales trust. One of the Achilles heel with the deferred sales trust is it can't defer taxes when you have debt over basis to, for just that amount, right? So in Steve's, in Ron's deal, his basis, his basis was, let's just call it zero. His debt was about 1.3. His sales price was like 4.2. So he had about a million three of debt over basis, and so we had to replace that with a Delaware zero coupon, which is a partial 1031. So it's deferred sales trust is not a one size fits all. This is part of our company's called Capital Gains Tax Solutions Plural because it gives people the ability to use a couple different ones. Oh, this is the Shea Pope. Check that out. Look at how good he looks right there.
The
Shea Pope,
the goat. There he is, guys. I think he was on episode 24 or 25 of our podcast. So go back and listen to that to hear what he is doing.
Yeah. And so he'll come to conferences with me. And so I call him a believer, right? And it's really cool. He's a believer in the DST and what we're doing for people. There's another $17 million deal in Sacramento, a billboard sale. Joe Walters is the financial advisor who brought the deal. It's a billboard. His name is Jeff Joaquin, who did it. Stormy Atkins, her and her husband in Arizona, did it for Airbnb sale. This is Dharma, $37 million, two exits in Texas. This is David Sloan. He's an attorney. We've done five exits for him now, over $120 million worth of exits. He's a multifamily city syndicator. Works for GP Interest. And so the list goes on and on and on. San Diego, Monterey, Saratoga, Auburn, California, Placerville, Phoenix, Arizona, Palo Alto for primary home, Bitcoin sales. And then, of course, we came up with the book with Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank. So those are just some of the things there.
So kind of landing the plane on this portion of the podcast, you have $1 million liquidity, like net proceeds, right? Gain, essentially. Give you guys a call, see how you can help. What would you say to somebody who's maybe on the threshold of their investing journey? What could they take from this tax strategy, even if they aren't going to like pick up the phone and call you next?
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, to clarify, so it's $1 million net proceeds, $1 million gain per transaction. Unless you do have two, there's a little exception. Like let's say you had one at 500 and one at 600 and you're going to sell both transactions within the next, you know, short period of time, you can combine those. So we have a little bit of a caveat there. So if someone just listens and they're like, hey, I don't actually have a liquidity event. I haven't made the millions of dollars. I think what you take away from here is you should always be thinking about building your next team member, whether that be scaling your business, whether that be preparing for your own taxes, right? Mm-hmm. Real estate CPA is really good if you're in real estate, whether that be that commercial broker, whether that be that financial advisor, that commercial real estate syndicator operator you're going to be partnering with. Always be thinking about building your team and bringing in the who, not being in the how. And so now, candidly, we work on a conditional basis too. So the cool thing is you could just, you know, subscribe to our newsletter, you know, start seeing the deal stories, subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if and when you have that liquidity event, you call us up because we'll walk you through the ability to look at this. And we do need to set this up for foreclose of escrow, right? But we won't charge unless you use the DST and then your deal actually closes. And so there's no obligation to just get making sure that you know who. Henry Ford had this thing where he had a Rolodex, right? And he said, I don't need to know everything because I can just call somebody and have them come to my office and I get the answer. And we kind of want to be that. We want to be that type of group for you when you go to exit.
That's awesome.
And I think we do, if you are listening and maybe you haven't, you know, actively made a move to sell something yet, but it's been that kind of nagging question in the back of your mind of how do I even exit? And that's felt so overwhelming for you. This would be a good place to be, right? If you have a lot of assets and you're trying to figure out the next step,
give you guys a call and see what you can do for them. Very good.
Yeah. We're going to jump into our next show segment, the Smaller Pockets. So, Brett, go ahead and tell us about maybe your worst deal. Maybe it was, if it was a deal you were, maybe it was your investment, or maybe it was an investment you were helping someone with. Worst real estate transaction, what went wrong, and then what did you learn from it?
Okay, so I'm going to give you two. So one, I was brokering on, and so for all the brokers out there, you know, I met with a potential client, working with a potential client, built a ton of rapport. Literally, he's like ready to list the property. Last minute, he's like, hey, I've got this residential agent. I know you're a multifamily specialist, but I've got a good relationship with him. I'd like you guys to partner up on this deal.
No.
Would you be open to doing that? And I thought it was more like an ask versus a tell. Yeah. And so I didn't quite read that correctly. And instead of being open-minded to it and talking about it, fast forward 2 weeks later, he listed the property with that agent and with another broker who was my competition.
Whoa,
not only did they go on to represent both sides, and this is like a $4.5 million listing, amazing property, sweet location, but they ended up double ending again like 5 years later with the same client.
Oh.
And the client that was on the buy side was a client of mine. Like I had great, he was my first call I was going to make. So like it was brutal.
Dude.
It was brutal. And so I let my ego get in the way, or my pride get in the way, or, you know, or just not listening, you know, well enough, thinking
wow.
that this guy was going to choose me over the residential agent. Right. And technically he chose my competition because he knew he wanted the multifamily person, but I was not needed, I guess. All right. So that really hurts. So that's number one. Number two would be, we just invested into this deal, this downtown office building, right? Before COVID. And across the street from the Capitol,
tons of
street traffic right on the rail of downtown Sacramento that was booming. Like everything was just going amazing. And now obviously it feels like a ghost town. It's getting back to more normalcy, but the deal's in bankruptcy right now. So we're going to lose all of our investment. My clients are going to lose their investment. It's a bummer because before it was, you know, at 90% occupied, all the tenants stopped paying rent. They all fled, and now we're left. We're going to lose our money. So those are the two worst stories.
Wow, you cannot foresee that. You can't plan for that.
So just from a broker, I mean, the broker inside of me is, you know, a lot of those tenants should have been personally liable for the leases, right? So
they are.
Was there?
We're provision? Fighting it. They are, and we're fighting it, but.
Wow.
If their business goes BK,
yeah,
you know, and how much legal fees can you pay? And we'll see what we recover and what that works. But
and you're in a state that's, you know, probably not super favorable towards the landlord and the owner.
You know, for multifamily, you're right. You know, for commercial, I think it's different.
It's
you know, California, I think is definitely more equitable when it comes to business, when it comes to like landlord, you know, to tenant, like, you know, someone who's living in a multifamily. Then you're right. It's definitely not as favorable for the landlord.
So what's the learning lesson on something like that? I mean, I know it's kind of unforeseeable. It's like hard to go back and be like, did somebody go wrong on something? Nobody's planning for a pandemic in their pro forma, but.
Yeah. I mean, well, the good news is we didn't over-concentrate, right? I didn't have a ton of money into it. Didn't have a ton of money into it. I worked with the GP on it. And I brought some clients in for some LPs and we're an LP. You know, the good news is I didn't sign the debt in my name. It isn't an LLC. The other investors didn't sign a debt in their name. So, I mean, we didn't over concentrate.
Yeah,
we have,
right.
you know, we have
There's
different investments,
still.
Different places, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's something that continually I'm trying to have in the back of my mind is how do we educate investors to have the right expectations and to kind of protect them from themselves too. Like there would be certain investments you wouldn't let someone just walk in off the street and put their life savings in. You'd be like, hey, that would kind of go defy conventional wisdom. Let's, you know, do these different things. So when you have people who have disposable income, maybe this is a portion of their portfolio that makes it a little more palatable, but still very difficult, obviously. So, wow. All right, man, we're going to go into our little nugget. So Brett, what's one practical takeaway or piece of advice that our listeners can implement for their businesses?
Yeah, I would say you've got to build an elite organization. Okay.
Dawn Winter. Nice try.
Comes from Dawn's book, right? Which I literally like read like every day, you know? And so
would you call, is that an EOS? Like, is that kind of an equivalent of Traction or?
Yeah, it's a mix. Yeah. He's got a mix from Traction, EOS and different things, but kind of back to the point we were talking about before, where if you're not building, a team now or hiring or a culture or the bigger pieces that's going to long-term be the foundation structure for your business, for your investments, for your investors, for your clients, it's going to be very hard to scale and to produce at a high level. There's four areas of every business. There's attract, there's convert, there's deliver, there's collect, right? And so if you're all four of those things, it's going to be tough to make the biggest impact for people and for your team, for your family, and everything else, because we're not all good at these different types of that type of the business. So
right.
you got to start hiring now. I wish I would have hired earlier more. So I would just say start hiring now and build and get like a system like a Dawn Winter's to build.
Would you hire your wife?
Well, she's already working full time with the five kids, and so she's already the queen. And
good
she's,
answer.
So I work for her, so I don't know how that's even possible.
We get it. He has five kids. I have two, so we get the family side of stuff. So
yeah, that's somebody went out there and was like, man, if you know your wife was getting paid like market rate for each of the services that she's doing as a mom, she would make like X amount, you know, per year. So she would definitely be the breadwinner. So that's funny. All right, man. Well, hey, what's been one of the greatest resources in your real estate investing career?
The greatest resources, I think it goes back to people, right? The mentors. So I think of my cousin, Nick, who got me into investment real estate brokerage at Marcus & Millichap, and the mentoring and the coaching and the friendship and the support and the belief in me. I think the biggest thing is finding coaches and, you know, ideally family members as well that speak life and belief into what we could become. And so I had the fortunate opportunity to have people like that, even managers at Marcus & Millichap who did the same thing. And then also on the flip side, I had those who didn't believe, right? And I want to thank them too, right? Because they, wow. It's, I don't know, the Michael Jordan documentary, he talked about that what inspired him or drove him were some of the either the naysayers and or the things that he would just create. And so we've had the naysayers and it still pops up here and again, and that actually just drives me to take that and I thank them, you know, because without that, I played basketball in college and growing up played high school football and basketball. I always like going to the away games. I love people talking trash,
right?
You know, in a good way, right? And that always inspired me to just be better and grow. So I think it's having both sides of that. And to that point, I mean, people are going to laugh, right? They'd still laugh. They laughed at the deferred sales trust years ago. People still laugh, I think, probably, right? But in particular at Marcus & Millichap, it was funny because we had those who were like, oh, open to it. And there were those that like would laugh and say that's never going to work. And it's like, well, but if it does, it'll change everything, right? And so to be on this side of it now after that side of it, and that side of it, by the way, was also working at Cheesecake Factory nights and weekends, multiple side hustles, living with my brother in a small condo, everyone telling me to go get a real job. While I was still working at Marcus & Millichap, it wasn't always successful. It was actually the opposite of success, financially speaking. But that's the time where I grew the most. And so I would say embracing the mentors that are positive and embracing the ones that perhaps are not believing as much and use that as energy to fuel you forward.
Isn't it? I think it's ironic that you were at Marcus & Millichap as a commercial like broker doing that and then working at the Cheesecake Factory because there's been certain things that we've had to do where you just like, you're not above it and you got to do what you got to do. And you kind of are sitting there and you're like, man, what's wild is the people that I'm maybe interacting with over here have no idea that like when I'm not here, I'm over here brokering a multi-million dollar deal. And it doesn't matter. They don't care at the end of the day. But it's a beautiful irony where you're gonna do it. You have that grit to get through. I think it's easy to generalize people's success and really like lose sight of those moments that you're talking about where you're, you know, staying on your brother's condo's couch, you know, doing a double shift,
That's a great reason to get the book, right? I literally shared those deep, dark things that at the time I was like embarrassed, right? And, like scared, yeah. like people figured this out. And it's probably true. The guy I was trying to list the property in the other room, if he saw me, he's not going to let me list his $3 million asset. So I said, yeah. hey, go serve that table. I actually did that. That actually happened. So, I mean, it is true, but you look back on it now and those are the things that help to, I think, hopefully inspire some people, right? To not give up. But you're exactly right. You've got to be willing to persevere through it. Now I have a spouse, my wife, who is willing to persevere too, right? So I had a lot of support. So it's not without that. But yeah, I appreciate you sharing that, Garrett.
Yeah, awesome, man. Well, and lastly, a good segue for your podcast, for your book, for your company. How can people follow your guys' success?
Yep, capitalgainstaxsolutions.com is the website. You can also look up Capital Gains Tax Solutions on iTunes, Spotify, on YouTube. We have a ton of content. We have a playlist there that I think is pretty amazing. You can get the difference between a 1031 and a deferred sales trust, a Delaware 1031 and then deferred sales trust, and so much more client deal stories. And then the book is coming out on Amazon on the 20th of April.
Just this in time month?
For tax season, baby. Yeah. So like 9 days as we're recording today on the 11th of April. So building a capital gains tax exit plan, you can go there. By the way, a little secret for everyone who listened to the very end. For you, I want to give you a gift, okay? For 24 hours, only on April 20th, okay? 24 hours, you can download the free version of the book, okay? And with this book, by the way, is 300 plus pages. We have Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank in the book. We have the Don Winter in the book. We have the Joe Fairless in the book. You guys might have heard of that guy from Ohio. We have some amazing, amazing people. We have Tony Robbins, CPA, in the book, Tyler McBroom. So it's amazing people. So check it out. I got a couple chapters too, but 24 hours. And if you want to buy the copy of the hardback to support a guy who worked at Cheesecake for a while while trying to keep the family alive, sure, you know, I'll leave that to you. But for that 24 hours, download the free ebook.
Awesome. 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 Well, we'll have all that stuff in the show notes, man. Brett, it's been great to get excited with somebody else in the industry, but doing something that is coming into maybe the mainstream and more into the light where a lot of people can utilize this. So we'll be shouting this from the rooftops, man.
I appreciate it, brothers. I appreciate both you guys. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Blessings.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.